Hey guys, it's me, Alex. Well, I can still do the voice. That's fucking sweet. All right, so this isn't an episode of the Alex Cast. I hope this didn't get your hopes up. It's in the title. But I thought that since you're still subscribed to the RSS feed, I will plop down the first episode of my new podcast. It is called WizBiz with Alex and Eric, featuring Eric Arneson of Arnomancy, frequent guest of the Alex Cast, the show feed you are currently listening to. And yeah, this is episode one. We talk about Adventure Time, the cartoon, and we talk about occultism and all the same shit that we talked about on the Alex Cast. In fact, we talked about Adventure Time a lot in the Alex Cast. We summoned a cartoon demon. This is the natural furthering of that thing. So if you missed me, come join me there. Also, I've been doing John and Alex Hate Stuff this whole time, so you probably shouldn't miss me. You should be listening to that. So John and Alex Hate Stuff, available wherever you find podcasts. WizBiz with Alex and Eric, available wherever you find podcasts. Hope you're all well. If you listen to this and you're like, oh shit, I miss Alex, say hi. I miss you too. All right, bye.
Time to get real. I want to see some crazy WizBiz.
What's the magic made out of, ding-dong?
I want to see some of that WizBiz.
Welcome, listener, to WizBiz with Alex and Eric. This is a podcast that may or may not be about Adventure Time, and this episode we're going to be covering Season 1, Episode 1 of Adventure Time, which was called Slumber Party Panic. I am Reverend Eric, one of your hosts. I am also the host of the Arnomancy podcast and a weirdo, I suppose. And I am joined by my co-host, Alex. Alex, would you like to introduce yourself, or would you like me to introduce you?
Ooh, that's fun. Okay, how about you go first, and then I'll mock you for what you missed.
All right, well, Alex is one of the co-hosts of John and Alex Hate Stuff podcast, which is a podcast about liking movies. He's also an author of fiction, of novels and short stories, and you can find all of his work on Amazon. I'm sure there will be a link to that in the show notes, and there will be a link to my stuff in the show notes. But, you know, I know this is just the first episode, so you don't really, really care about that yet. What you really care about is Adventure Time. So,
an adventure. Yeah.
So I watched this episode for probably the 80th time this morning, and it's a good one. It's their first episode. It's got lots of great quotable lines, including, you know, Finn yelling mathematical and stuff like that.
Yes.
And it introduces a lot of characters that have really significant story arcs way later on, including Starchy.
Yeah, Princess Rainicorn.
Princess Rainicorn is right there. And Princess Rainicorn and Jake are already dating.
So this is this
Tree Trunks.
Oh, yeah, Tree Trunks is in there. Mm-hmm. My main takeaway from this episode, which I was very surprised by, was how mature it was for what because this Adventure Time, as it goes on, no spoilers, but becomes a much more plot heavy, interconnected, weird. I've claimed that it's the cartoon version of the Mahabharata towards the end. Mm-hmm. It is like it's actual text you can study, but generally in my head I'm like, season one, that's that's the kids' episodes. But I was surprised like how much was here. Like there's most of the building blocks of this stuff. I mean, the first episode is literally fucking candy necromancy.
I know. It's crazy candy necromancy, but it's science. That was one thing that I was thinking about is there are some later episodes where Princess Bubblegum makes it really, really clear that she thinks magic is bullshit, right? And that everything is just super advanced technology. But in this episode, you have this whole thing with like Finn breaking a royal promise and the Gumball Guardians like freezing time and bringing Finn up for this grand test and, you know, all this sort of stuff happening that is incredibly magical and also kind of like a legendary magical sort of environment. And Princess Bubblegum doesn't really seem to blink an eye at it. And at the same time, she is doing her weird science necromancy on the dead candy people.
Yeah, well, I mean, so that's Arthur C. Clarke, you know, any sufficiently advanced technology is going to be indistinguishable from magic from an early, lower, civilization.
Right, Right.
All that quote is exactly what Arthur C. Clarke said. The stammering in the middle, they usually cut out to put like a little ellipsis.
I've seen that on Wikipedia.
But the bit where it goes, you know, that thing where where Arthur C. Clarke forgot the word civilization and he hemmed it on for a minute. That's actually the real quote. But yeah, that is the thing, is it's technology that looks like magic, which is probably what it is. All right. So,
yes.
You host another podcast called Arnomancy. Mancy, meaning look at me, I'm a guy that does magic.
That's Greek.
Latin. Oh, it is Greek, isn't it?
Maybe.
Is magic technology?
I think parts of it are. I think that when you're talking about a fantasy world like Adventure Time, you're not talking about magic the same way that we might look at it in the real world.
No, I mean real world. We're talking real world.
Real world. Is it technology? I'm not sure. I think it's more art than technology in a lot of ways. I think that there is technology that is used in magic. I think that there might be some element of it that is, I don't know, perhaps like the technology of consciousness or the technology of our experience of the cosmos or something. But it's a really good question. I feel super put on the spot, and I want to ask you, what do you think? Like, you do chaos magic and have piles of tarot cards behind you and stuff, and this a book true. About UFOs.
The book about UFOs was brought here by a guest.
Okay, so what do you think? Is magic technology?
So I think magic is technology in the same way writing down words is technology. That you are inscribing something into reality. Now, how magical you want to be when you talk about writing, but you are manifesting an idea from some ethereal space or your brain, you know, whatever, whichever way you want to take it. You're putting it through a meat engine and putting it onto a computer or on some vellum or on some paper. I feel like all of that are elements of machinery. And Terrence McKenna talks about the, you know, mechanical elves. So, I think it's technology in the same way. Yeah. In the same way, like, I think maybe if you think of chemistry as a technology, you know, that it's.
Well, yeah, of course. Chemistry is a science, but it produces technology.
Yeah. But I mean, if you think about what difference is it between putting a widget on a cog than putting a hydrogen molecule on an oxygen molecule?
No difference.
Yeah. So if you like from the abstract, and for a while, like the whole chaos magic thing, I always thought of it as computer programming, and what you're doing is, and not like, ooh, you're hacking the universe, which I guess you can't say that if you want to be dramatic, but you are, you know, you go to a website and you see that HTTPS and you're just deleting the S and getting into like the little, you know, the not secure aspect of reality.
Since
you come from a ceremonial magic background, that's kind of why I asked it to you, is like, if to me, ceremony feels like technology.
Yeah, you know, I guess over time my feelings on that have kind of changed. So I started off doing a lot of ceremonial magic, but I guess, yeah, it's tough to say. I think that it kind of also might depend on your approach. I think for some people, the ceremony and all that stuff is the technology of magic. I don't know. I think, so here's the thing that I think is different. I think that in fantasy worlds, a lot of times you have this sort of concept of like, you know, this magical energy that like the wizards or magic users can like draw upon. You know, like, have you seen The Dragon Prince, the cartoon The Dragon Prince?
I have very much seen it and really liked it.
Well, so you know that in The Dragon Prince, there are like two different sources of magic where people can either pull from, I can't remember the names of any of it. I haven't watched it in a while, but you know, there's like the human magic, which pulls from like that dark corrupting source. And then there's like the elf magic or the dragon magic, which is more natural and blah, 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 blah. But so magic is sort of seen almost as like a supernatural force that exists in some sort of pool. It's like, you know, in role-playing games when you get like magic points or whatever, you know, you have like this source of otherworldly power.
Like the crypto mana in this book here.
Yeah, yeah.
I have another book of crazy 1960s, you know, kind of vaguely Eastern nonsense that I found on the internet and printed out. One point they talk about it like section 4, subsection E, header F says crypto mana. So yeah, your mana points.
Right. But see, I don't think that that's how... at least in European magic, I don't think that's how magic was really viewed. Magic was sort of viewed as kind of like something that arose out of the interconnectedness of all things. It was an innate feature of reality. And so magic wasn't necessarily, you know, pulling from something that was opposite of science. It was the same stuff as science.
Yeah.
It was basically just how you use your knowledge to, you know, to advance whatever. So, yeah, I guess in that sense, maybe in some ways it is a technology, in some ways it's something else. That my views on magic ever since I started working on the Agrippa project have really, really changed a lot. And I don't know that they have settled down well enough that I can have a really concise answer. As we can tell here, I'm not being concise.
Well, I mean, the good thing is we got nothing but time. We're a podcast where we're supposed to talk to each other for a while, so we can just ramble on about nonsense. So the thing about technology, which I find interesting, technology, magic as technology, is this, is like on, let's say, TV shows, Supernatural, for instance, uh-huh. which I've not seen a lot of, but I have seen them. They do like magic stuff, but it's like, well, all you have to do is draw the thing. You have to subdivide it by, you know, putting a pentagram in the middle and then write the right runes and mm-hmm. light a candle and say the magic spell and it works. At that point, although it's magic, it stops kind of being magic because it's reproducible mm-hmm. and testable. It now enters into the realm of science, weirdly enough, because like in the same way you pour, I don't know, salt on a snail and you're mm-hmm. like, oh, I can observe this. Well, all you do is you say to the North Michael, to the East Uriel or whatever. Mm-hmm. And if you say it the right way, a wall of protection comes up. You go, oh, cool. Now this is science.
Yeah,
it's like Evangelion.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking like in something like that where, you know, you have to make the right circle of the right symbols on the floor and suddenly you have a demon trap. Like, yeah. Can't you just program a Roomba to do that for you?
100%. Yeah.
And the Roomba can then just go put a demon trap in every room and you can just sort of sit back and relax. Yeah. In magic, the way that it's sort of portrayed in Western esotericism in the you know, I'm doing finger quotes right now.
Yes, I can attest to it.
Real world. Okay, finger quotes over. It's not just a mechanical operation in the physical world as much as it is something that kind of unites something that you're doing in the physical world with something that's happening in the imaginal world inside you, inside your own imagination and soul. And something that is happening in sort of the celestial world or the world that's sort of above you. So the unifying force between whatever's happening in the material and whatever's happening in the celestial is the human's imagination, the human soul, and the ability for us to basically create with our imaginal faculty. So I think that that's that precludes Roombas from...
Well, does it? Because, I mean, Roomba, we program the Roomba, so maybe part of our kind of, you know, the imaginal state is like...
But you have to have the right image then. So you could use a Roomba.
Oh, but you have to program it to make the pentacle.
While the Roomba is doing the pentacle, you have to be there with it.
Yeah.
With your imaginal power active. And there has to be something going on with the Roomba that ties it to your imagination while your imagination is tied to the celestial world.
What if you were an adorable cat that's also a wizard that likes riding your Roomba? Can the cat put its, like, can the cat sit there and concentrate while it's on the Roomba and then, like, magical tuna just shows up?
I think if there's anything we've learned from Adventure Time, the answer to that question is yes.
That is the whiz-biz of it all.
And I feel like to a cat sometimes, cats have, like, ritual ceremonial behavior where they, like, repeat things.
Right.
You know, so they get into this mindset of, like, oh, you know, if I... jump on the couch 3 times, scratch on the door 100 times, meow loud enough, all of a sudden there will be tuna in my bowl. So for them, that might be a magical ritual, whereas for their human, it might be like, oh my God, the cat's being so annoying, I'm just going to give it the tuna.
Yeah.
And maybe that's how prayer works. It's so annoying.
Yeah. Oh, that's why Christians act like that.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. Shot to the guts. So, hey, we talking about cats. I asked on Twitter. I'm at Alex Bolan. Alex with 2 X's. He's Arnomancy at Arnomancy.
Uh-huh. With 0 X's.
With 0 X's. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can put them in. It just won't, you know, it'll stop functioning.
It won't work. Yeah.
We asked if anybody wanted us to talk about something. And that just reminded me. Somebody, I think it was Steph Quake, asked about familiars.
Familiars?
Are familiars, like, remotely real in any kind of, like, actual... witchcraft, or is that just shit they came up with, you know, for fables?
Well, I mean, familiars definitely show up in a lot in, you know, medieval and early modern literature about witches and stuff about witch hunting and stuff like that.
No, but is it like Malleus Maleficarum kind of stuff? It's just bored white people that love Jesus making shit up about witches? Or like, is it based on some shit that witches did?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know that we really can know. But I mean, you know, there's definitely, if you look in, you know, some of our oldest existing magical texts, there are plenty of rituals and things for summoning familiar spirits. You don't really get the sense that they're necessarily visible or anything like that. But familiar spirits are definitely things that we have rituals for going way back.
More the classic Azrael to Gargamel kind of.
I don't know. I mean, you know, a lot of people have had cats.
Well, that's what I was just thinking, because everybody likes cats.
Yeah, and, you know, how many times have you ever met a cat that's going to do what its owner says?
Truth.
You know, people don't. Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, it's not like I've never seen one. Let me put it that way. And I mean, I've had cats while I was a practitioner, for sure. You know, I haven't had cats in a few years, but.
Well, there's all those old, you know, monks writing on vellum, and then you'll see like an ink spill on cat in paw prints. And like there's one, I think it's Pompeii, that there's in like fresh, whatever you call it, like the roof tiling. There's like a little cat paw, because like the asshole cat wouldn't leave the guy alone while he's trying to make roof tiles. So, I, you know, it's probably something along those lines of just, everybody likes cats. So, of course, magicians are going to have cats, and then people just kind of like wrap that up into the whole thing.
And, you know, I was thinking when you were talking about the monks, you were going to bring up like all the weird pictures of like cats licking their assholes and stuff.
Oh, that too.
End up in the marginalia of manuscripts. I love all of that stuff, because monks were such horrible artists. They would draw the worst looking cats and still take time to like color them in.
Yeah. My favorite of those, one, marginalia, beautiful word. Two, my favorite of those is, for some reason, they had this whole thing with knights fighting giant snails.
Yes, I like that too.
It's such a weird, I mean, it really gets me like kind of time traveling to that time of just like, when I was young, I did that cool S, you know, like the, we called it the Stussy cool S back then.
Yeah.
But the cool S. And like over the years, that's been rediscovered by people. But back then, they were doing snails fighting, you know.
So that, the giant snail thing, when I first came across that on the internet, it reminded me, do you remember the Dragonlance novels? They were
a series.
So in, I think, the first or second Dragonlance novel, they fight a giant snail, or maybe it's a giant slug. Anyhow, a giant gastropod of some sort. And it's like this big, fearsome, ferocious beast that they have to defeat. And I remember getting the adventure module for that when I was a kid, and just being surprised at how difficult it is to defeat giant snails. They are tough.
They got like a big hard shell around them.
Yeah, and they've got like 12 hit dice. Yeah, they're tough.
12? Jeez.
Yeah.
That is difficult.
I know, it's more hit points than a hill giant. I think, though, it might be time for our first segment.
Ooh, I have one, though. Speaking of which.
Can I introduce the segment?
Well, you don't know which one we're going to do yet.
Oh, you want to introduce the segment.
I do, only because it's apropos. Mm. Eric and I are going to talk about what we're watching, what we're reading, what we're creating, things along those lines, kind of updates with one another. What I'm watching is Stranger Things Season 4.
Me too.
Which features a lot of D&D rolling.
It does.
And there is a beautiful sequence in the first-ish episode, where they're cutting back and forth between an epic throw that the player needs to hit a D20 crit roll to end the campaign successfully, cutting back and forth to a high school basketball game where a guy has to hit the last second three-pointer. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this is delightful. This shows everything about the way I was raised.
And I love how by the time this comes out, everybody will have seen this season already.
I mean, I feel like as long as we don't spoil it, only because I haven't seen the last episodes yet. So
I haven't seen the last episodes yet either. So anyhow, just this particular thing, the thing that's so beautiful about it is, you know, both sides, like the basketball dude gets the three-pointer, the D&D person rolls the nat 20.
Yeah.
Everybody is super excited and celebrating. And then when the groups come back together, of course, everything goes wrong. Because you have to have drama. Yeah. You have to have drama.
How are you liking? I've seen the first... Non-spoiler thing to tell you what episode it's on, because I don't remember, is they went to Utah.
I think that's the last one I watched.
Okay,
also.
So we're very close to Utah.
I kind of lost track. I was binge-watching them while I was on vacation in Gig Harbor, and it was the sort of thing where we were watching them late at night and, you know, smoking some extremely legal marijuana.
Extremely legal?
Extremely legal. Wow.
I get mine from the guy at Surfer Dude Pizza or whatever the hell
Buds are Us.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess we don't have to really call it super legal anymore, huh? Anyhow, we were smoking marijuana and it was late at night on a weekend. And so we were watching these episodes and they were so good that we kept watching. But I'm sure a lot of details didn't make it through my brain because we also watched like, I don't know how many episodes we watched, but we watched multiple episodes a night for a couple nights in a row. And that's a lot of Stranger Things to take in at once.
Yeah, I did the same thing. Not the getting high. Well, I got a little high, but not a ton. And watched the first, like, I don't know, three. But this season, they're super long episodes, so that's like a big commitment. Or it's a, you know, it avoids the real world for a while, and that's why I did it, because it's escapism.
Those extra long episodes do make it kind of tough to... You know, when an episode is under an hour long, it's easier for me to be like, oh, yeah, I could just watch that during my lunch hour while I'm eating lunch at home because, you know, I work from home.
See, man.
Yeah, I'm very fancy.
Wait, so was this the segment you wanted to do?
I don't know. What were we going to call it? What are we reading slash watching?
Slash.
Okay, that's a horrible name for a segment, but maybe we could ask our audience, what should you?
No, you know, could call it slash fiction. So everybody out there, just search for slash fiction, and it'll be Alex and Eric talking about the fiction that they are reading.
Do people still make slash fiction?
I believe so.
Okay.
Well, I know in the last few years I've seen it for... Actually, the Dragon Prince, I know I saw reference to. I don't remember. The lady that becomes kind of a dark witch that I don't remember any of their names.
Anyhow, Alex with three X's is a famous Dragon Prince slash fiction author.
I do believe there's a porn lady that's Alex with three X's. I mean, it's two X's. I don't even know. But there is an Alex with multiple X's that is in the adult entertainment industry. What else are you doing? You got any other writing arithmetic to share?
Yeah, well, I've been pretty deep in the Agrippa Project, so I've been
Why don't you tell them what the Agrippa Project is? Because there's a slight chance that someone that doesn't know who you are and listens to your show finds this show.
Okay, so this is a project that I've been working on since probably December, and it is a podcast series that is sort of a documentary deep dive into the three books of occult philosophy by Heinrich Cornelius Agrippa, which was originally published in the 1530s, but in the last couple of years there have been a couple of brand new English translations that came out. And it's been really fun. You know, I've been talking to lots of experts. And the episodes are like fully scripted, which is really, really different for me. So I'm writing the scripts, I'm doing these interviews, and I'm chopping them up, and there's lots of editing and stuff involved. I wasn't really, really prepared for the amount of work it would be, although I'm really close to done at this point, and that feels good. The last few episodes have been pretty slow, but I think everything is mapped out well enough that the final ones are going to come out at the right pace. But that's required a lot of additional reading. So outside of that, I've been checking out ebooks from the library, and I have been reading the Marcus Didio Falco Mysteries, which are a series of mystery novels that take place in ancient Rome. And they are super nerdy and super delightful. I've been enjoying those. And I've been reading the Brother Cadfael Mysteries.
I don't know what either of these are.
Brother Cadfael is like a Welsh monk from the 1200s, I think.
Oh.
And it's just historical mystery novels. They're basically my brain candy.
Oh.
It's where my brain goes to rest when I'm like, please let me stop reading wizard books for half an hour, anything like that. So that's kind of what I've been reading. Although right now I'm reading something really good. This is an excellent book. It is Blood and Thunder, the epic story of Kit Carson and the conquest of the American West by a dude with a name that doesn't sound very real, Hampton Sides.
Hampton Sides.
That does not sound like a real name.
No.
Sides
I kind of buy, but Hampton Sides.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever.
Some New Englander, probably.
What's that one?
It's the story of Kit Carson. And
I have no idea who Kit Carson is.
He was a trapper and military man in the mid-19th century who was part of the American Western expansion towards the Pacific Ocean.
Is he why there's shit named Carson, like Carson City?
Oh, yeah. Carson City's named after him.
Okay.
It's really, it's gripping. You know, I enjoy history books, but I'm always really prepared for them to be very, very dry, dusty reading where you kind of have to slog through a lot of stuff. This guy, Hampton Sides, is an incredible writer. Like, his prose is just really gripping, and it's a really, really delightful book. But it's also kind of long. So this is and everybody apparently wants to read it. Checking it out from the library has been difficult. So this is my second checkout. I'm about 2/3 of the way done with it and enjoying going through it. So Blood and Thunder. That's probably the best thing that I'm reading right at the moment.
So I've been reading for the past, I don't know, year. I've been trying to do a dive on underrepresented writers in my, you know, my library. And I've decided that is women, because inexplicably, like, everybody I read is a dude.
Mm-hmm.
And then people of color, because everybody I seem to read is white, with the exception of I read a lot of Japanese stuff, but mostly everybody else is white. And then I was while I'm on it, I'm like, I'll try it out. Let's see if I can find any non-binary kind of trans writers. So I've been doing this just to, and I'm not, this isn't some like, ooh, I'm trying to be woke thing. I just literally, as somebody that's a writer and likes to read,
it's
feel like.
It's good to expand your horizons, period.
And it's kind of embarrassing to be like, how, especially the women, because, you know, statistically, it's going to be harder to find non-binary writers. You know, percentage-wise, it's going to be more difficult. But, the, you know, women, I don't know if you know this, like half of people are women.
Yeah.
And, like, maybe a 16th of what I've read are by women.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I've been going through that and just trying to push through. But I'm currently reading, to various extent, but I'm currently reading the Dark Fire Trilogy, which is... a lady wrote it. It's fantasy with a touch of sci-fi. No, it's just fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
But interestingly enough, it's very related to what we were talking about earlier. Spoiler alert a bit. I'm like a third of the way through the book. So if this is a spoiler, then whatever, dude. Suck it up. It's very, very distant future, and we've colonized another planet, and their magic is somewhat real. It's like the Fey lines, they call it, or the Fey currents.
Uh-huh.
And it's almost like weather. The kind of struggle is that humans can sort of use it, but it's like weird and awkward, and it's very, yeah, it's just it's an interesting thing. But I'm like, as I said, like maybe a third or fourth of the way through it. And it's interesting, but it is stuff I've read before. And I find myself going, is this sexist if I stop reading this book? I mean, it isn't. But
yeah.
Like, because I went into this, like, trying to find, you know, underrepresented voices in my collection,
mm-hmm.
finding one kind of, okay, just, I don't really feel like doing this right now. It's a little, they're fine. This is literally not a knock on it. It's just, in my, I don't know, I'm going to say about from 11 to 15 years old, I just read fantasy.
Oh, yeah, yeah, me
so
too. Fantasy and science fiction.
I'm so awash in it that you've got to be doing some weird backflips for me to really stay interested.
Sure, yeah, I totally understand that. I read so much fantasy and science fiction when I was a kid. And yeah, the female writers were definitely underrepresented. Oddly enough, I could be wrong, but those two historical detective series I mentioned,
yeah.
I think both of those series are written by women.
Oh, really?
I know that the Marcus Didio Falco one is. I'm not sure about the Brother Cadful mysteries. I'd have to look that up.
But, yeah.
I've thought about that a lot too. I guess it's tough because I want to live in a world where I don't really care if the author is male or female or,
yeah.
you know, what color their skin is or what their sexual orientation is and all that kind of stuff. I really don't want to care. But I do feel like it's important to sometimes make an effort to make sure that you're not living in a weird little bubble that you've accidentally created.
Yes.
Yeah, I think about that too sometimes.
Yeah, for me, the main problem is, like, it's especially the woman, the female example. I mean, it's literally 50%. That should be, so it's, you know, with like non-binary trans writers and more coming out, so like it's actually going to be easier, but for like published works, what's that, you know, a 10th of a percent maybe? It's
yeah.
So you've got a really small pool. So it's like, okay, it's understandable, but I mean that, I feel like you should go out of your way because it's a voice you haven't heard. But the not caring aspect is if everybody is represented equally, that's the promised land of you wouldn't have to worry about it, but people aren't represented equally.
They are not represented
50%
equally.
Of books aren't or 50% of popular books aren't by women. Like, it's not
true.
We're not, and people of color don't have the same representation. It's so, I think as people that are interested in the written word, it's kind of important to go that way.
You know, it's hard for a lot of the stuff that I study, since when you go back to like early modern writing, and especially when it comes to like ceremonial magic or occult books and stuff, there is nothing except white dudes writing it. You know, you can go, and I mean, it's definitely geographical, so you can go outside, but like, you know, if you want to read Arabic texts, it's going to be pretty much all, or Muslim, you know, it's going to be all Muslim Arabic writers who are writing it. So any region you go to, it's fairly homogenized. So you have to kind of, I don't know. It is tough. And I had trouble, I struggled with this actually with the Agrippa series that I'm working on, because I realized that like it was really, really difficult to kind of spread out or to find like a diverse set of voices to talk about Agrippa, because the only people who pay attention to Agrippa are people who look like us.
Yeah.
At some point,
27 years old, washboard abs, handsome men. People
perfect
that look like us.
Hair.
Yes.
Perfect hair.
Perfect hair. The other book I want to bring up, because I feel like I'm shitting on everybody in my exploration of underrepresented writers, is Sherry S. Tepper, Grass. I really enjoyed.
Sherry S.
Tepper is the author. Okay. The book is Grass. It's the first of the Arbi trilogy.
Uh-huh.
And it's traditional sci-fi, and it's really fucking good. It's just super well done. It's supposed to be the first of a trilogy. I don't really see where the story goes afterwards, but I'll probably, yeah, I don't know, maybe in later years I'll revisit it. But for a first book, it's really good. Some interesting ideas. It feels, it's probably sexist to say, but it feels different. Like, it feels like I'm reading a bit of a different voice than I'm accustomed to.
Are you going to make a list of all these books for the show notes?
I mean, I'll pretend I will, and I'll 100% forget. Yeah.
We're going to need an intern. Anything else you're watching?
I am a massive, giant, enormous, holy shit fan of Better Call Saul.
Okay.
Which I think is one of the best written shows that's ever existed. It is fantastic. And the final season is happening now.
How does it make you feel?
It's great-ish. I'm struggling to say this because I don't want to spoil anything. But there, how do I say this without any kind of, okay, so it's, the season is bifurcated and the kind of mid-season finale happened. Knowing what happens in the mid-season finale has made me go back and rethink the first chunk of episodes and why they are like that. And now I've, upon reflection, because when watching them, I was like, this is not the show I've been in love with. It's still terrific, but it's not the, like, legitimately, like, I'm very impressed by every episode show.
So it's not really as good as Adventure Time.
I mean, this is actually a really tough question. Is Adventure Time better than Better Call Saul?
Can you compare them, though? That's the other thing. I don't know that.
No, I don't think you can, but just pure enjoyment. But anyway, yeah, so Better Call Saul, season 6, I think, right now. The first 5 seasons are nearly flawless. There is some storytelling in there that is so fucking good. And the first few episodes, like, oh, this might be a little boring. This might have kind of missed what I was coming from. And then the events of the mid-season finale is like, oh, no, now I see why these were a little slow. Like, now I get it. This last few episodes are going to be pretty goddamn impressive.
That sounds pretty good.
So the audience at home, Better Call Saul is terrific. You should watch it. Some of the best acting you're ever going to see.
So also out right now, there's Obi-Wan. I've watched the first few episodes of that, and it's pretty excellent.
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
I am very surprised to hear you say that.
I think you're going to like it.
Oh, I've watched it. I don't like it at all.
You don't like it at all?
Okay, let me take that back. It's not that I don't like it at all. I think it has nothing to say. It is a spoonful of sugar. Like, it is just, oh, look, remember this stuff? That guy you like's doing things. Hey, look, there's somebody else you like. They're doing stuff. Oh, does that break canon? Who gives a shit?
But what about that part where a suppository falls out and he dives into that toilet world to go get it?
I don't know what you're referencing.
Trainspotting.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen Trainspotting in like 20 years.
But it's Obi-Wan.
Yes. No, you are correct.
Ah, man.
I'm not trying to like yuck your yum, as the kids say. And by the kids, I mean 40-year-old men. It feels like it's saying nothing. And the amount of shit that it stretches or breaks canon, I'm probably going to stick it out because there's some sections that I like and I do enjoy Ewan McGregor.
I think I'm just enjoying
Ewan. Little Leia is great.
Yeah, I'm enjoying Ewan McGregor's acting a lot.
Yeah.
And Little Leia is like the definition of precocious, right? Like, mm-hmm. Isn't that precocious? I think that's what it means.
Yes.
And then also there's the lady who's the fake Imperial officer.
Oh, yeah, Lyria Sand. I don't know the actress's name.
The actress is great. You know, she was in Rome.
I know she was in Game of Thrones.
I believe you.
Yeah, she was Illyria Sand. That's the, that's one of those phonemes I was spreading before. That's not the actress's names. I don't know the name of anybody. Oh. I'm shocked I remembered Ewan McGregor, to be honest with you.
It's because I reminded you of
and frankly, wait, now that I think about it, her first name might not even be Illyria. It is Illyria Sand. No, that is in fact her. And she is played by, Indira Varma.
This would have been way better if you could have done that in your BMO voice.
What does BMO sound like? Wait, hold on.
He said BMO sounds vaguely.
Yeah, it's like a Korean lady.
Vaguely Korean.
Yeah. Well, it's done by a Korean lady, and that's the.
Is it the same person who does this Lady Rainicorn?
I don't have that knowledge.
Okay. We might want to. Maybe this would be something that would be good for our future episodes is.
Fuck all about Adventure Time. Because well, I'm not willing to do that.
Maybe we could start to accrue some Adventure Time trivia. Although it's very possible that we will have lots of irate fans writing to us about Adventure Time and teaching us trivia through this.
That would be nice. I mean, just to have fans would be great.
So it does remind me, though, like in season one, episode one, in Slumber Party Panic, it has this great ending scene where, you know, Princess Bubblegum is like, Finn, what did you learn about breaking promises? And Finn's like, I learned that if you break a royal promise, you get to stop time. You get to challenge the Gumball Guardians.
Yeah.
And then in the end, everybody comes back to life.
It's a wonderful message. Did I say this before? My favorite thing is, and it's such a dumb line, and if I said this earlier, you're not going to hear this because I'm editing. Where she goes, welcome to the candy foyer. The foyer, sorry. The candy foyer is such a, it's such a dumb. My enjoyment of things is basically picturing myself in the writer's room and them just finding it just delightful to be, the candy foyer is so good. Like if they had said candy vestibule, it would be the same thing. I'm just like, this is so great.
One of the things that really disturbed me about this episode is like, so what is the stupid potion called? The re-lificator or whatever?
Something like that.
The undeathification formula that Princess Bubblegum is giving to the dead candy people. And they come back to life and they're like, candy. They want to eat sugar. They want to go eat candy people. And then at the end, Finn tricks the living candy people into putting blindfolds on and pretending that they're attacking piñatas. And they kill all the candy zombies who fall to the ground and spill open their guts and it's all candy. And the candy people are all down on the ground digging into these candy zombie guts, eating the candy zombies. And I was watching that and being like, this is the most fucked up ecosystem in the world. Basically, candy people eat candy and are made out of candy.
Yeah.
And they don't really seem to give a shit if they're eating the same kind of candy that, like, their neighbor is.
Well, let me break this down. One thing, this is part of the, what I love sets up for later in the show, because that kind of existential horror while being a kid show ostensibly is goes on through the whole thing and finding that in the first episode. But I was just say this, oh, Mr. Candophobe, oh, Mr. Anti-Candy Bigot. Hey, what are we made out of?
Carbon. We're made out of meat.
No, we're made out of carbon.
Yes.
What is everything we eat made out of?
Carbon.
Carbon.
It's true.
Oh, look at you. Oh, just because it's different from me. Wait, speaking of different from me, is this...
This segment is called Alex Has a Segue.
No, it's 100%. We're still talking about the same episode, just slightly earlier.
Okay.
Is this a weird race joke? Where they took Mr. Cupcake, the muscle cupcake guy, in a Game of Truth or Dare to take his wrapping off.
And they're like, ooh, I didn't know he was chocolate.
I didn't know he was chocolate.
I think that every time I see the episode, and I don't think it's intended to be a race joke at all.
I mean, if it is, it's not particularly offensive, because there's no
there's no judgment.
There's no stereotyping. It's just literally, oh, I didn't know he was chocolate.
Yeah.
But it's an odd... And maybe it's the internalized prejudice that I grew up with. But I feel like you could say, oh, I didn't know he was vanilla. Makes it slightly less awkward, or I'm someone that's way too oversensitive about the shit.
Yeah, I kind of always think that I'm being a little oversensitive about it, but it does make me think of so in the Adventure Time universe, there are four elements in the material world, in the magical world, right? There's candy, slime,
salt, ice, mercury.
What are they? Candy, slime, ice, and fire.
Yes.
And in the first couple episodes, you get introduced to a few of those. You meet Slime Princess and the Ice King in the second or third episode.
Lumpy Space Princess, isn't
she? So Lumps, the Lumpy Space Princess thing, she comes from another dimension.
Oh, that's right.
I remember?
Yeah, you're right.
The episodes are so short. You can just easily binge watch tons and tons and tons of them at once. And so I did watch, I watched Adventure Time right before I came over to record. So I watched, but I watched four episodes instead of just one.
Yeah, which is fine. I enjoyed the show greatly.
Yeah, me too.
What other parts of episode one is there to discuss?
Well, So we already mentioned that a lot of really long-standing characters show up, even though their story arcs aren't really well-developed until later. It's really interesting to see that they were there early on. And in fact, the cinnamon bun guy.
Yeah.
He's one of the dead people that's brought back to life.
That's right. Yeah, because they call him Old Cinnamon Bun.
Yeah.
In that first scene where she's resurrecting the dead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then he becomes a regular character.
Yeah.
Is Peppermint Butler in that episode?
I did not see Peppermint Butler. But I'm going to be watching for his first appearance because Peppermint Butler is kind of my favorite.
Well, he becomes an occultist over the course of the show.
He is the ceremonial magician in that show.
It's so weird the level of odd that this show gets to. The fact that we're talking about ceremonial magician, ribbon candy.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing that that I think that makes – because, I feel like every time we podcast together, we end up talking about Adventure Time.
Yeah.
But one of the things that's so amazing about it is it is a really, really rich world that they create across, dimensions and planets and all of this stuff. And it's really heartbreaking.
Yes. It gets emotional as the show goes on and you start to understand the universe that you're living in.
Mm-hmm.
We should tell the audience, though. Again, there's chances that people have not heard this stuff before. Eric and I... 5 years ago, let's say, 4 years ago.
It was five.
Met up to do a Halloween episode wherein...
Oh, that was probably four.
We did a ritual that was put forth on it during Adventure Time to try to summon a cartoon demon. So that is available on the Alex Cast feed and the Arnomancy feed. I will put links in the show notes.
Oh, yeah. That was a good one.
If you're here inexplicably for the seven other people that are into occultism and Adventure Time, that this is an episode that we did a few years ago, which also gives our bona fides because we were there.
Because we've been talking about Adventure Time and occultism for a very long time.
Yeah, well, obviously more than four, because we both had to know that we were both into Adventure Time.
This reminds me of something. So so Keats asked for an update on the weird occult triangle or whatever we were calling it. He tweeted at us.
Yes.
I can't remember exactly what the tweet said, but it reminded me of a couple of things. It reminded me, first of all, of our Adventure Time summoning ritual in Lad's Edition, but it also reminded me of... there's this local webcomic called Modest Medusa that I've been reading for a while. And the author of Modest Medusa was writing about how he lives in what he thinks is a haunted neighborhood. And this neighborhood isn't Lad's Edition, but it is between Division and Powell. But it would be, it's way the hell out there where Hawthorne doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, okay.
Or is it Division and something north? Anyhow, I was looking at the map. I was like, man... That definitely looks like a haunted neighborhood. It's got lots of it's probably out around 160th or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Lots of weird little twisty streets. Yeah. I know that area a little bit because I've house sat out there and walked around quite a bit. But it just reminded me that Portland has a lot of haunted spaces.
Yeah.
So
to be fair, Lads isn't haunted so much as I just invented an entire mythology around this area. It's designed to be like a beautiful walking area for kind of middle class people.
Yeah, but it's haunted.
Yeah, I mean, but that's just me saying that.
No, you're not the only one.
Well, that's just because people get scared of stuff. I've been living here for a long time, and well, yeah, it's haunted as fuck.
It's haunted by Alex.
Yeah. Well, if you look at it's a Lath edition in Portland, Oregon, if you ever want to look up a map of that, it's this weird hyper-sigil neighborhood that is fucking, like, if you look at that and show it to anybody that's part of QAnon, they're going to think we're sacrificing babies at the center.
Yeah, but we don't. We only sacrifice grown-up people.
Yeah, and we sacrifice babies on the northwest corner.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, come on. We're not savages. You know,
wait, is that the food cart's corner?
Yeah, fuck if I know. I mean, wink.
Wink. Yeah. It is the food cart's corner, yes.
Yeah, well, you know, food's got to be made of something. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now it's time for our brand new amazing segment called, Hey, Look at This Shiny Rock I Found.
I think it might be, shiny rock sounds cool. I was going to say, hey, look at this cool rock I found, but I think shiny is better.
I think we're going to call it a shiny rock.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or we're going to forget. So anyway, hey, look at this shiny rock I found is, of course, a segment wherein I tell you guys about I tell you all about trying to get better about not saying guys. Interesting words or facts I've run into since last episode. Now, since last episode.
Is this
episode,
one going to be about octopus penises?
No, but I could give you an octopus fact. Word-based fact.
Let's go with your original fact.
Okay.
And if we need an octopus fact, we can throw it in there later.
So I have four different words that I want to tell you about.
Okay.
Maybe not all four. Two are related. One is kind of weird. So A, B, or C?
A.
A. Onomatomania. Onomatomania is when, or do you want to guess first? This is better. Yeah. What do you think that word means?
Okay. Hold on. Ono?
Onomatomania.
Gosh, no idea.
So onomatomania is when you become obsessed with a word or you start overly using a word a shitload.
Onomatomania.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I want to have onomatomania for that word.
Yes, onomatomania is an absolutely terrific word. I should say that I put this list together of vaguely, I wanted to start with like wordy words.
Uh-huh.
So the wordy words made me think of this other one. I had onomatomania for the word lethologica when I was younger.
Lethologica, words that make you go to sleep?
Ooh, close. Yeah, because no, but same root for the river, river Leith or Lethe or uh-huh. pronounce it. Lethologica is when you can't remember the word you're trying to think of.
Oh, fuck.
So the river having its forgetful properties and not its sleeping properties.
Okay.
So if you're experiencing lethological, but I found that word amazing because at one point I was trying to tell a friend about it and I fucking spaced out on the word. I literally had lethologica about lethologica, which led to a bit of onomatomania because I'm like, that is the best thing that's ever happened to me. I literally forgot the word for when you forget the word. It is a delicious, delicious bit of irony.
I love both of those.
Yes.
Those are good.
Well, okay. Well, I'm going to give you one more because it's very related. Maybe two more.
Okay.
What do you think lethonomia means?
Lethonomia would be name forgetting?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
When you can't think of someone's name.
Oh, I have that problem a lot. Yeah. I frequently indulge in lethonomia.
Yes. Much like our earlier conversation where we're talking about our pop culture stuff where I'm like, I don't know the name of any actress. Oh. I don't have, yeah. I know it's hilarious, sad. Sorry. That's
I have a joke with my roommate. So my roommate and I have a bubble friend who started coming over, who was like the only person we would let into our shared space at the beginning through the pandemic. And we have this joke. So he would basically come over once a week and we'd watch TV shows or whatever. We have that joke where there's one of those familiar actors that shows up on a TV show, you know, like they get hired to do supporting actors in like one episode a lot. And everybody's like, oh my God, it's that guy. Or it's that girl.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, that guy. Yeah.
Oh yeah. That guy actor. Yeah. That's what
everybody's
we call him
too.
Yeah. Yeah. That guy. All right. I'm going to give you the last one just because I made the list. And this is not going to be an every episode thing that I give this many because
oh no, it's
I'm
every
lazy.
Episode now. It's a segment.
I don't know. No, that's fine. But I don't know if I could do four every episode.
Okay.
Because the fourth, I found this so great. Do you know why we call the and sign? You know what it's called?
The ampersand?
Do you know why it's called that?
No.
So it originally was part of the English alphabet coming after Z, and it was called the and sign. But since everybody spoke Latin in elementary or in, academia back then, say X, Y, Z, and per se, and per se, and ampersand.
Ouch.
And that's literally, no, that's not me making a jump joke. That's where ampersand came from.
That's a painful etymology. I feel kind of sorry for that word.
Oh, I love it. I think it's great. it's just mushing words together.
And you know about the Octothorpe.
Yes, because that was when there was a cloning accident with the athlete Jim Thorpe, and eight of them ended up fighting each other to the death.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then the one who survived had, you know, one of those weird-shaped bruises.
I know Thorpe has something to do with Jim Thorpe, but no, I don't remember Octothorpe.
Octothorpe is the hash sign.
No, I know. But, I mean, its origin, I think, was at, like, IBM Labs or something, and I think somebody just really liked Jim Thorpe, so they called it Octothorpe.
Really?
I
thought it was a much older.
Could be miles off. That was what I heard. Because
I mean, it's a really good story.
Well, I mean, fuck it. I've got the world's repository of knowledge in front of me.
Are you gonna ruin this for us?
Jim
Thorpe.
Jim Thorpe, Octothorpe. Okay, so the first thing says origin unknown, but I heard this somewhere. Oh no, actually, the Wiktionary. Thorpe could be a reference to Jim Thorpe as one proponent of the original terminology was a fan of Jim Thorpe.
Huh.
So, but I think they just called it hash or something like that, or
pound sign.
Yeah. I think pound sign actually may have come later as well.
Well, it was used as a pound sign for a long time, I believe. I think hash is new.
Or hash might be new.
I don't know. Maybe that will be next episode's Shiny Rock.
Yeah, it's looking up hashtags and ampersands.
Yeah. Okay, and now, hold on, it's time for another new segment.
Another new segment?
Yes.
Much like the entire episode, this is episode one.
Every segment's a new segment. This segment is called, What Are We Working On? So, Alex, what are you working on? Are you writing any novels right now? Are you working on a collection of short stories?
Yes. So I'm working on three things at the moment. One is I'm trying to finish up the short story that I'm not going to go into because it would give away the entire thing, but just a like hardcore character piece. I just started work on this sci-fi novel that it's been percolating in the back of my head, and I started putting words down together. It like just chunks and kind of ideas, and just basically I'm just trying to build the kind of feeling of the piece before I put it down any words that anybody might ever see. But the main thing is I've talked about this for fucking years at this point. I've been working on a novel, a follow-up novel.
And to Periphery.
Yeah. It's got nothing to do with Periphery, but a follow-up novel in that the next thing that came out was a short story collection. My novel Periphery and a short story collection is called The Theravada Machine and Other Stories. All available on Amazon. Buy things, yay. But the next one I'm doing is this kind of magical piece that is... Basically, you know, I like to write in magical realism, or at least that's what it turns out to be, kind of in the end. It's just, I write the stories I want to write, and they just have to somewhat overlap with that description. So I've been working on this since, man, like even towards the end of Periphery, I was writing words for it, and that was 9 years ago at this point. And I had a huge stall, and I think I finally broke what was bothering me about it. So I've been putting words down again for that. Right now it's called Intention. Which, because it's a magical piece, you know, the intention of magic, etc. I'm not sure if that's what's going to come out, because I find that title somewhat annoying. But I also found the title Periphery somewhat annoying, and then ended up being the title. But yeah, I'm 40-something thousand words in, and nice. I like writing short novels. So I'm not that far away from having what I like to call the vomit draft. You know,
exciting.
All the words are in a sequence. The story is told. I bounced it off of... super fan Steph Quick, because I just needed somebody else to read it. And all the stuff I was concerned with, she didn't pick up on. And then the things that, you know, so it was quite a gratifying response from her of all positive and any kind of concern she had. I'm like, you didn't notice. Cool. Fuck yeah. Because most of the times I have problems with anything I write is it's just, the author's the only one that's ever going to know that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's, you know. Yeah.
I think Steph Quick tweeted at us and suggested some segments also.
It was baking and gardening. Which I know very little about baking, and then almost nothing about gardening.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I can make some amazing drop biscuits, but aside from that, I'm not really much of a baker. So that wouldn't be a good segment for us.
Yeah, I've made cookies a few times. That's about my baking.
Yeah, I can
experience.
Bake cookies too. Yeah, but from a box.
Yes. No, I made it from scratch once. I mean, they weren't worth the effort, but it was they tasted like cookies. So yeah. they It was successful in that it wasn't black mush in the middle of a pan. It was cookie-like.
It's funny because I really, really enjoy cooking. And I do cook things in Dutch ovens from time to time, but I don't really bake much.
Yeah.
So, sorry, Steph. You should have asked about birds. We sure could have had a segment about birds.
He knows about birds. All right, so that's what I'm working on. What are you working on?
Well, I've already talked about the Agrippa project, and that's coming along well. And I, even though I've been struggling with it a lot, I think I'm getting really close to done. It's just going to, I have to treat it more like a job than something that's like, yes, this is so much fun. You know, I have to like really sit down and work on it, which happens with every project if you want to finish it. I've also been working on, I'm still learning, and I'm not really making anything amazing yet, but I'm learning how to make music, songs. I'm learning how to make songs using a digital audio workstation, MIDI keyboard, all that kind of stuff. So I've been working on that. I haven't made huge amounts of progress, but I've made one song that I thought that was pretty good. I've done a lot of stuff involving kind of like playing with MIDI and transcribing MIDI and things like that. So that's kind of probably most unusual thing that I've been working on lately. So for instance, I put together the song, our theme song for the podcast, which I haven't done yet, but by the time our listeners are hearing this, they will have already heard the intro music.
Okay.
And are probably just about to hear the outro music.
Yeah. So I was about to be like, oh, do I have to act now? Being like, oh yeah, I love that theme song, especially the part where it's, anyway, I'll fill that part.
No. I think it's okay if our, you know, I mean, this is our first episode. The pieces to the whole podcast assemblage are slowly coming together. And, you know, the theme song, I have a big chunk of it in my head and I've been practicing stuff. I'm looking forward to creating it. Hopefully it's good. Who knows?
Yes, it's going to be great. I've already heard it. It's fantastic. I can lie to you. I don't know. I mean, technically, when these words are spoken into their ears, it's true.
Oh, I mean, I just feel like if you say that it's fantastic now, then no matter what piece of crap I give you, you're still stuck with those words.
Yeah, whatever. It's better than what I can do. Interesting part about season one, episode one of Adventure Time. I forgot about this, and I feel like it just goes away completely at some point. Is I'm going to gesticulate to you here. Is
okay.
Princess Bubblegum's arms doing that Popeye waveform snake thing?
Yes.
It happens for a while, and I feel like that kind of rubber band, Merry Melodies, Looney Tunes, I don't know which ones did it, but that it, sort of thing goes away.
Yeah. I think so in either episode 2 or 3, Jake does this thing where he makes a fist, and the fist departs from the normal animation style and is sort of like this ultra realistic looking fist that grows big and big and big and has like big craggy fingernails.
It's like a Ren and Stimpy style thing.
Yeah. And I remember my attention was called to it this time and I was sort of like, oh, they stopped doing that. So the animation style does like really tighten up and turn into something a little bit more cohesive. At some point, I think it happens during season one. I think at some point during season one, Pendleton Ward must have realized that he wanted to do this for a while.
Yeah. And that's, wavy things equals effort.
Yeah. Or even wavy things take away too much from what he's trying to do.
Yeah.
Because I think Adventure Time also may not have started off as serious. Like, I think it becomes pretty obvious in some ways that Pendleton Ward had a world that he'd built when he started doing Adventure Time, but I'm not sure how committed to it the writers and everything were at the beginning. Does that make sense?
No, it does. Yeah, he's writing in a similar world to the one that ends up being fleshed out, but it's not, you know, he's not, because it becomes like kind of hard, almost Marvel Comics like canon towards the end.
Yeah.
And I think he just kind of sketched out, he basically sketched out like the Marvel universe, went, eh, this is where I play, and yeah.
And he also, like in the early episodes in particular, the sort of D&D parody or D&D satire is way more common.
Like,
totally. You know, you hear Ice King refer to himself as a magic user.
Yeah, Enchiridion, I think, is D&D, isn't it?
Yeah, there's all sorts. Well, Enchiridion is a real book.
Oh, is it?
Well, yeah, sort of, in a way.
Oh, I thought, no, I mean, I know what you mean. I thought it was purely a fictional, I thought it was Necronomicon. It's a purely fictional book. And
it is a real book.
There okay. I didn't know that.
But it's also like a legendary book term. You know, sounds like a D&D thing. And they do all sorts of things that sound like D&D stuff. I can't remember if they ever refer to things as like plus one or anything.
Yeah, they
like
roll
that.
A D20. They don't get laid in high school. It's everything D&D.
Demogorgon is everywhere.
Yeah.
But, I totally lost the train. What were we talking about?
Adventure Time.
Well, I know we were talking about Adventure Time, but...
No, I was just giving the Adventure Time!
Come on, grab your friends.
That'd be funny for This Is How We End Every Episode, is you just get confused, and then you go, Adventure Time! And it ends.
Well, I'm okay with the episode being over now. I feel like now is the time when we tell people that they can find us on all the major podcasting platforms.
Correct.
You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and
I think that's it.
Weibo and VK. What's our tag? WizBiz Podcast.
I think so. Let me just confirm that.
We're confirming this right now, but it's probably WizBiz something.
It's definitely WizBiz something.
But
it's, I think it's, oh yeah, WizBiz Podcast.
WizBiz Podcast.
I wasn't sure if I had included the cast or not. That's, whether it was WizBiz Pod or WizBiz Podcast.
Okay, so it's WizBiz Podcast. Podcast. That's yes. One Z and then another Z and then podcast like you expect it to be.
Yeah, and no H.
And no H.
Yeah.
Where would the H be?
Whiz.
Whiz? No, I said whiz.
No, I know, but when you would say like cheese whiz, that's, oh no, is that no
I would say cheese whiz.
Yeah, but, you know, you're like Ponzi. Look at, you know.
Oh, boy.
Look at your
anyhow,
fancy bad English.
This has been
manners.
Fun. I enjoyed this. I would really, I look forward. Okay, so listener, this is what we need from you. We want to know if you enjoy this, our segments, if we should switch them up. Please feel free to yell at us on any social media outlet you want to. If you make us cry, we will include that segment again.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a warning.
Yeah, we'll record ourselves crying as well.
We will. We will. I carry a recorder with me at all times.
Yeah.
So if I read the tweet and I start crying on the bus, I will record it.
I'll sob your handle on Twitter. X69s are hot. I can't believe you made fun of me.
Don't be sad, Stinky. Come with Daddy and I'll make it all better. Goodbye, Gunter.